Welcome back to Slut PhD. I am your host, Julie Fennell, and today's topic is many ways to imagine and enjoy rope bondage, what I usually think of as the most versatile of kinks. This is your reminder that this podcast is intended for legal adults in the area that they're listening from. So if you, like me, are in the United States, I expect that you are at least 18 years of age or older. I assume that many of you came to this podcast by way of following me online, where I often post lots and lots of pictures of rope and also write extensively about rope. However, I didn't want to make a rope-focused podcast because there are already several of those and they're quite good. I didn't have a lot that I particularly wanted to add. However, I didn't want to make an entire podcast about sex, kink, and gender without also talking at least a little bit about rope. I'm hoping this will be one of several episodes about rope, but it's not going to suddenly turn into the main thing that I'm talking about around here, even though rope is one of my biggest passions. As we start this conversation, though, it's important to try to clarify what the fuck I mean by rope bondage, because it's a very, very broad concept. Typically, at least American rope aficionados distinguish between what they call Western bondage, which is very focused on like single and double columns and what you can do with that. And so if you look in like old pinup photos, you tend to see it in those. And typically that type of bondage, at least nowadays, is done with nylon or synthetic materials. Whereas the other type style of bondage is known as shibari, S-H-I-B-A-R-I, referred to as Japanese-inspired rope bondage. At this point, it's certainly become a worldwide phenomenon that originated in Japan, but has had tons of influences and lots of development all over the place. And so it's a little unclear at this point who it belongs to, culturally speaking, for better and for worse. And it's one of the reasons why I tend to not refer what I do as shibari, just because I feel like the type of rope work that I do is so far removed from anything that was originally that I know of from Japan that at best I can say that it is influenced and inspired by that thing, but it has moved a long way since then. I'm hoping that eventually I'll be able to get one of my dear friends who has a lot of knowledge about the history of rope on here. I'm not a great expert on the history of rope, but the best I'm going to be saying real fast is that most of the like shibari that you see nowadays, to the best of my knowledge, and I'm sure somebody will immediately get on here and argue with me about this because rope people love to argue about things, is that around the 1990s is when you start seeing emerging the thing that to me is recognizably what I think of as shibari, showing up in various like Japanese kink magazines. And before that, when I've looked at the pictures, didn't see many noticeable differences between like the Western style bondage and the Japanese style bondage. So if you look at like those 1950s style pinup photos from America and compare them to some of those earlier Japanese photos, I don't see great differences. But by the 1990s, you start to see emerging something that gets increasingly complex, sophisticated, interesting, nuanced, aesthetically different, happening in Japan, and more emphasis on what we call suspension, which means that, you know, you literally hang a person in rope. So maybe it's just part of their body, maybe it's all of their body, but it becomes more and more complex and more about being in the air, whereas previously it was, you know, mostly just ways to tie up a person, tie them to a bed, tie them to a chair, fairly simple, basic things. And then it got more and more and more like artistic and kind of circusy. And by kind of circusy, I mean very circusy, because in Japan, this was like a club performance thing, and still very much is. And slowly, suspension rope bondage made its way over to America and the rest of the West. Traditionally, this is mostly done with jute, which is a natural fiber. And nowadays, sometimes people sort of integrate these things in increasingly eclectic ways. Or sometimes people try to stick with them single styles. There's a lot of different styles. People frequently ask, why bother? I feel like this is most commonly a question that I get from cis straight men doms. who are like, I don't understand why I would spend forever doing these complicated, aesthetically tricky ties to do with someone when really all I wanted to do was just tie them up and fuck. It seems like a lot of unnecessary steps. And if that is what you're trying to do, I mostly wholeheartedly agree. I think people are constantly confused, as I've talked on this podcast before, about the fact that lots of people, including myself, do a significant percentage of their rope bondage for non-sexual reasons. And that's going to be a lot of what this episode is about, is all of the other reasons, really, that you can do rope as well as sexy ones. Certainly, there's a big emphasis among a lot of rope nerds these days talking about how floor rope is underrated and you really don't need to do suspension, and suspension just isn't as cool as everyone says that it is. And if you really want to connect with somebody and be intimate, then actually suspension is not the best way to do that. And I will say that for myself personally, I both agree and disagree with that. I find the crazy, wild circus rope suspension antics, and I'll go into more of what I mean by that later, can be extremely connective as long as that's what you want to be doing with somebody. And I actually really loathe the term connective and the way that a lot of rope aficionados use it, and sometimes even kinksters in general, but particularly rope people tend to use the term connective rope as if there is one thing that is connective rope, and that's just a ridiculous notion. For the longest time, people would use the term connective rope to basically refer to a specific style of rope, which was inspired, I think, by a few particular people, but it was supposed to be slow and very intimate and like have lots of power going on with it. And they'd preach lots of ideas, like the rope scene starts before the rope ever even touches the other person's flesh. And like, it's really about you using the rope to communicate with the other person. And to some degree, like, I do personally subscribe to all of these things, but I think anything can be connective as long as you try hard and believe in yourself. And I think it's a really useless term to talk about the things that we really enjoy and love about and any kink. I think connection is really just about what you feel with your partner, and it shouldn't be something that implies a particular style or preferences or speed or anything else. You know, like for me personally, I really love fast rope, especially as a bottom. I find that to be very connective. It turns me on a lot when somebody ties me well and quickly. And that's not included in that traditional list for some reason. That apparently people decided that tying slow was more intimate, which I'm like, I don't know. It's often kind of boring, frankly. I don't really get it. Sometimes it's intimate, but frequently it's not for me personally. And that's part of why I think it's so important to contextualize the idea of connection in terms of what you and your partner are into and not what any sort of stylistic subculture or group tries to preach. Connection is what you like. The end. And for the longest time, people would use the term connective rope as being opposed to what was referred to as circus rope, which I mostly identify, frankly, as a circus rigger myself, which means like rope that's very fast and kind of showy and has lots of like stunty and performance aspects to it. And I always found it deeply weird that people would try to tell me that somehow that wasn't connective, because some of the most intimate moments of my rope life have been doing those types of performances and stunty antics because there's a great deal of trust involved, and it's very much like a trust fall where those are the types of things you do in a group situation to try to create feelings of trust among people, where you literally fall into their arms. And if you do those types of things with rope, and I do lots of what I call rolls or drops, like it creates the same experience and sensation for both the bottom and the top, and creates those same kinds of feelings of intimacy and trust. Those, however, are not a traditional feature of that style of purportedly quote unquote connective rope. And that lengthy introduction also serves to make another one of my points, which is that rope people often aren't very good at articulating the things that we enjoy and love about rope. I think we aren't often given a really good vocabulary for describing the things that we love and enjoy about rope. We're handed a list of styles and we're told to pick from them. And as if that would describe everything that mattered, most of the words that we have to talk about rope were made by riggers to talk about the things that riggers care about, and riggers tend to care more about what things look like, whereas rope bottoms tend to care much more about what things feel like. And even so, I still think even the vocabulary that we have for riggers to talk about the things that they care about isn't great. And so, one of the things that I hope to do in this episode, especially if you are somebody who is very familiar with rope, is to give you more of a vocabulary to talk about rope. And I have posted this before in shorter form to Instagram and FetLife. If you're looking for it in a list, you don't have to like grab a pen and take notes. It does exist on the internet already. And if you are not somebody who's a big rope aficionado, I hope that listening to this will give you a better sense about the types of things that inspire and make rope people passionate about what it is that they do when it's not just about sex and kink. So the short version of my own story for this is that I started as a rope bottom in 2011 was my first real full suspension. And I've been doing rope a lot, pretty much ever since. And in very early 2020, started suspending people after having been doing some casual knot suspension rope for several years before that. And for the longest time, I was a little puzzled by it. I was like, this is okay. I'm really like intrigued by what I see, but this doesn't actually do much for me. And then slowly I started being able to find more and more what I cared about in rope and what I enjoyed doing in rope. The first few times I was suspended, it was pretty sexual, which was fun. I didn't really get the idea at that point that it wasn't sexual. So, like, the first real suspension I ever did was so I could fuck another girl in the air, which was amazing. But definitely gave me a really inaccurate idea about what the rest of my rope life was going to be, because most of my rope life has not been that thing. And so I struggled for a while to understand what was interesting about rope suspensions in particular, if they didn't involve sex. And then a friend showed me a picture of what's called a strappado, which is when your arms are tied together kind of in a straight line behind your back. And the moment that I saw that photo, I was like, I want to do that for the rest of my life. I hadn't even been in it yet, but I am a true masochist, born this way masochist. And I know pain that I will like when I see it most of the time. And I was totally correct that I love being a strappados, and I have been in love with them ever since. And I love them as both a top and a bottom. I think they're beautiful. I think they're fun. They're sexy. There's a whole lot that I love about them. But once I was in a strappado, I started liking rope a lot more. And then I fell even more in love with it when I had a really spiritual experience being hung upside down in a split in rope, tied to bamboo, a little less than a year after I started. And I've pretty much just been obsessed ever since. I would say that I am motivated by almost everything that I will talk about in this podcast today. Whenever people ask what I like about rope, I'm like, it's way faster for me to tell you what I don't like than to tell you what I do like. I have a few things that I particularly enjoy, like strappados, but beyond that, it's extremely broad, and it makes it easier for me to stay obsessed with it because I have such broad love of it. But people are also confused when I have conversations like this. So I had tied up this beautiful woman who'd clearly been having a good time. And as I was untying her, she's like, "So is rope your biggest kink?" And I said, "I mean, I do rope all the time," which is true. I usually do rope on average probably 3 to 4 times a week. But to me, it's usually not very kinky most of the time, except when it is, which, as I've said before, for me personally means like, I don't define something as being kinky unless it is doing something like erotic or sexual or like titillating in that way for me. That's a personal definition. And she goes, "Can I kiss you?" And I said, "Sure." And then I said, "See, now it's getting kinkier." which is, I think, an accurate summary of a lot of what rope is like for me, where it doesn't really start off necessarily being about sex or being inherently sexy. But it can easily go there if that's the thing that I'm doing with the other person. And also frequently if they experience it that way, like if they're clearly turned on by it or what they're doing, then it starts to make it sexier for me typically. But in general, I think that a big part of why rope is so popular is because it is and means so many different things to so many different people. It's this giant amorphous blob of a what is purported to be a single kink that's actually probably hundreds, if not thousands, of kinks all wrapped up into one, pun. And so there's just so many reasons why people can love it. However, that also means that sometimes it's really challenging for us to have conversations about what it is that we love in rope because we come to it with such different motivations and expectations. It's really common for someone who doesn't experience rope as sexual to come to do rope with someone who does experience it as sexual, and then to have a lot of awkwardness and conflict over the reasons that they're there doing the thing. It's not helped by the fact that rope community, I think, pretty blatantly tends to discourage people from being openly motivated by sex for doing it. And so that means that people are also discouraged from being honest about it. And by people, I particularly mean like cis straight men. It's a lot more okay in rope world if women are blatantly doing it for sexual reasons. But if cis straight men are doing it for blatantly sexual reasons, people will often look down on them. But for myself, and I think in general, here's a very short, quick list of reasons why people can do rope. One is a form of dance, and I'll explain each of these, which is to say it's a type of partner movement, you know, just like any form of social dance, as a form of visual art, particularly temporary art. So if you think about things like cake decorating, for example, or henna painting that aren't meant to last, as a kink, which is to say something that is like kind of sexy but isn't sex per se. And then also, obviously, as, you know, a form of sex or a accompaniment of sex, I guess. So to think about those more specifically, if you think about rope as a form of dance, I think of all the different types of partner dance that people can do together. So, you know, whether that's tango or ice skating or even rock climbing together, sometimes I think looks a bit like rope bondage because it's, you know, done with multiple people. You usually don't do it by yourself, and there often are literal ropes involved. And it's not shocking that there are some people who get interested in both. But, you know, in all of those instances, this could be something that you do with a romantic partner, and it could be like a shared hobby and interest, or it could be foreplay, or it could just be the sex itself, right? And so, you know, I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there who really love to dance with a person that they love. And, you know, they maybe even find that to be more intimate, passionate, connective, whatever word you want, than sex itself, right? It's something that you do with the person in a deeply intense way. And when you add in the adrenaline rush of some of those things, particularly something like ice skating, for example, or some types of partnered circus dance that you can do, yeah, there's a huge adrenaline rush that comes from like throwing someone in the air and catching them. There's a lot of feelings of intimacy that emerge from that as well. There's a lot of trust, both because you know that sometimes the person is going to fuck up, like no one's perfect. And also, there's a lot of trust, when it works, and it feels really hot and great when it goes well. And the same thing happens with rope. It's something that can really create a lot of adrenaline-packed intimacy between people that resembles those types of dance and acrobatics that you do with other people. And it's certainly no coincidence that there's a high overlap between rope people and partner acro people, right? Because again, someone's getting lifted in the air a lot of times, and it's about like this physical, sensual way to physically connect with somebody. If you talk about it as an art form, it tends to rely heavily on photography. One of the historical points of rope evolution that my friend, who maybe will I will convince to be on this podcast, made to me was that to a large degree, rope bondage as like an art form has co-evolved with photography in some really interesting and complex ways. Basically, as it got easier to share photographs, and especially once it got possible to share easy to share videos, rope started to get increasingly interesting and more complex. And that's because a lot of about rope is about aesthetics. It's about making something that, at least to some people's eyes, looks beautiful and interesting and cool and different, that you can shape the human body in a very particular way. I will admit that for the first probably year and a half, at least, that I was learning to tie, I was pretty mystified by what I was getting out of the experience. I was like, I largely started learning to tie because I couldn't find someone to tie me. And that's a fairly common experience among passionate rope bottoms. They're like, ah, I love to tie. I'm struggling to find someone to tie me. Fuck it, I'll tie myself. I guess I'll tie other people. In my case, I never liked tying myself. I only did it because I was stuck in quarantine with no one else to tie. But I did tie people a fair bit. I just didn't get to go out much, and I was frequently tying them outside in masks. And one of the first things I ended up doing after quarantine lifted, like it had just barely lifted at this point, was I went to a strip club on BDSM night, and it was nearly empty because it was early June of 2021. And I was watching the strippers, and I just totally clicked for me why I love to tie, because as I was watching them on the pole, I was like, oh my God, I really want to put them in very particular poses, and I want to make them stay there, and I kept wanting to tweak them and make them do things the way I wanted. And I pole danced for many years myself. I was never very good. I was at best mediocre. And but I still love pole dancing, and I often describe my rope style as pole dancing meets surrealist art, because the phrase that I often use for my rope aesthetic is captured in the act of falling, where I like to kind of imagine like pole dancers melting like Salvador Dali's clocks, basically, and I've like frozen them in some moment when they're melting. But yeah, it turns out that the thing that I really love about rope topping, especially, is manipulating bodies in ways that I find aesthetically interesting and pleasing, and having the control to make that happen. It's very exciting to me from an artistic and aesthetic point of view. And I don't necessarily think that that's sexual, like sometimes it can be. But I don't know that it's any more or less sexual for me than lots of other things that I do. And I think that for many people, the artistic aspects of rope can get blurry sometimes. I mean, in rope world, we are often taught to separate out between like doing like photo rope that's usually like completely artistic. It's purely collaborative typically. Like there's not unless someone's like photographing your scene, but again, that's not really like photo rope anymore. The term photo rope usually specifically applies to rope that was meant to be photographed. And so oftentimes it's like extremely collaborative between the person doing the tying and the person being tied, often to make sure that it's like very sustainable, because frequently you want something that someone can stay in for a long time so the photographer can get the shot. Alternatively, it's very stunty, so they can't be in it for very long. So you needed to communicate a lot about exactly how long you can stay in it and what you need in order to be able to stay in it long enough for them to take the photo. And it's often heavily costumed, lit, Like it's a whole process to make photo rope. And, you know, that is what people who are doing it for artistic reasons like are emphasizing. But I vividly remember one time I was bottoming for what was negotiated as a photo rope shoot with someone who I had played with, I think, once before. And it wasn't like photo rope at the point where we had played before. But like, I really enjoy being in strappados, as I mentioned before. And I felt a little awkward as like I was going to change outfits in between shots or poses and this rope shoot, where I was like, I smelled my pussy and I was like, my God, I smell like I've been having sex. Like, this is not the way that it's supposed to go when I'm doing photo rope. And I felt like self-conscious and a little embarrassed about it. And I certainly have also, as a top, tied people in situations where we were not doing anything that had been negotiated as being explicitly kinky or erotic in any way. And I was like sort of watching their underwear get increasingly wet in front of my eyes. And, you know, I think these things are not always tidy, right? Like they're not. And if we try to pretend like they are, then we're lying to ourselves. But obviously, sometimes we do rope that's for sex, right? I teach an entire class even specifically on suspensions and partial suspensions that are geared toward sex, because I think it's a little bit sad that we're in the habit as a rope culture and kink culture to a large degree of just suspending people and never having sex with them. And as a bottom, I really like being like suspended and someone sexing me. I think it's great. Like, we're not usually taught that that's part of the process for that. And so a lot of times people don't have a system for how to do that. And I certainly know that I'm one of the few femme riggers out there who like ties people up and fucks them. And I sometimes go out of my way to post pictures of that just because I would love to inspire more sex in rope world, even though admittedly, most of my rope on both sides is not sexual. But it is certainly possible to do even really elaborate rope bondage for sex. And I oftentimes find it to be really fun. Like, you know, I have several partners with whom I have, especially people who I have really quick sex with, like we're so turned on by the bondage itself that we'll literally spend like 20 to 40 minutes doing rope and 2 to 5 minutes of that time having sex. And I think we all walk away happy from that because we're so excited by the bondage itself and the nature of our chemistry and our dynamic that we are happy. And like, that's like a normal length sexual encounter at that point. And it's certainly not something that I get to do with most people. But I really enjoy the people that I do get to do that with. And I think that it's unfortunate that rope culture tends to not put any real emphasis on that. I think it's also really worth pointing out that rope relationships, especially over the long haul, in my experience, can really cycle through these things. So the rope relationships that I've had in my life that have lasted for years, if they weren't like romantic relationships that happened to involve rope, but rather relationships that started because we both loved tying and that was what we did together on either side, like they often moved around a lot. So like they'd go through phases where we had sex and then they'd go to phases where we weren't having sex, or maybe where we were like co-topping other people with sex or something. And then we weren't doing that in like, we were just shifting through all of the elements of this, or like sometimes they would be like way more emphasizing elements of kink and sometimes they wouldn't. And you know, again, like the movement through those different elements, I think was part of what sustained them across time. And you know, sometimes they were way more about art. And, you know, people who I've done this stuff with for a really long time, sometimes we just have long phases where we mostly only do one of these things or the other or not. But when rope is primarily about kink, it can still be quite broad, right? So like there are lots of people for whom bondage is a kink, And so for those people, it's mostly about the idea that the other person can't move. Frequently, those people love rope because more rope, more better is one of my sayings for people like that. The idea is the more constrained the person is, the hotter and better it is. I will say if you are one of these people, I don't think that it gets any better than being tied to a post. We usually call those hashira posts, but they don't have to be. Being tied to a post and that style of bondage is incredibly immobilizing, and I think it's really hot as both a bottom and a top, how much you can't move. And especially as a top, I think you don't necessarily realize how much more immobilizing it is. But as a bottom, it's really quite delightful. And so if you're somebody who really has eroticizes or whatever the term we want to use for that, if it's not about sex, who kinkifies the idea of being immobilized, of physically having control over another person, that can really feed into a kink. A lot of times when rope bondage is about control, or really it's like the kinkier it gets, there's a lot more emphasis on the idea like the hands are tied specifically, right? Like you want to make sure that the person gets fully tied up and can't escape, perhaps, or can't move, can't fight back, right? Whatever that thing is. I will say for myself also, as I've mentioned before, that I have a thing for the idea of being able to lift people. This feeds into for me both like a sort of a kink and also like kind of a sex and also kind of an art thing. So like I did ballet for many years, and I was never a great ballet dancer. But I did it for a very long time, and I always really thought that it looked great to be like a male ballet dancer who got to lift up the ballerinas. Like that was a role that I wanted to play that I wasn't remotely in any way qualified to play. I can't do any of the things that male ballet dancers do. And I always wanted to be able to lift up the pretty ballerinas. And I thought that that would just be so hot and so great. And I would never, ever in a million years have had the physical strength to be able to do that. But being able to tie people for suspension rope bondage allows me to do exactly that thing. And I even did like a performance rope piece with someone where we were dancing to the Pas de Deux from the Nutcracker. And it was really satisfying for me. And so sometimes I feel like the art dance kink thing can get really, really blended together, especially if you're somebody for whom dance and art is part of your sex and kink. But kink a lot of times feeds into with bondage too, obviously into dominance and submission dynamics, where you're getting control over someone and keeping control of them. I will say, like many people, the more I want that to be true, the more I tend to do things that are not suspension. I like tying people to beds. I like tying them to chairs. I like tying them to stuff that then means that they can't leave. like feeling like, a hot, sexy spider creature who's gonna like devour them in my web, right? These are the ways that rope can start to get really kinky. And there's so many ways that rope can be kinky and feed into that feeling like you are in somebody else's control. Or it's also a tool to physically manipulate someone else. In the previous episode, we were talking about the idea of like a force multiplier. I'll never be able to overpower most people physically without rope, but rope allows me to do that as long as they agree to a certain amount of initial like me doing something to them. if they put up a real fight, I still can't tie them up and take control. And I think for a lot of bottoms, right, there's all these sensations about being bound. It's like the same kind of feeling some people get with like a weighted blanket, but so much more. And those are examples of how rope can be kinky, but I want to try to break down a little bit more the specific types of things that you can enjoy about rope and to give you more vocabulary for talking to other people about it. And again, I do have posts on this, which I will link to, and the the information on this episode, but this is my opportunity to be longer-winded about it than I was when I wrote about it. One of the things I also think it's interesting to note as you think about some of these things is that if you're a switch, your motivations may or may not be the same for these things on both sides. I tend to find that most of my motivations are pretty similar, although I will say that bottoming tends to be more erotic-ish for me than topping in rope. I think partly because it's just more of a physical experience. But, you know, everyone's mileage may vary on that one. So I would say a very common thing that people love about rope is what I call sensualism, which is a way for us to relate our bodies together that isn't necessarily erotic. It might feel a little bit like a sadistic massage. It might feel a little bit like one of my favorite ways to describe this is being embraced by the many arms of Shiva. So it's like kind of a violent embrace sometimes, or it can be kind of like cuddly. I like to imagine sometimes that rope around me is like somebody has more limbs of their body to embrace me with. But it can also be, you know, a pleasure that is fast and sensual or slow and sensual. Like those things can both go together, but create very different experiences. But it's still ultimately about the feeling of relating to this other person through their ropes and the feeling of their rope on flesh and the feeling of rope, like moving body. And I do really love on either side the sense that rope is an extension of another person. I joke that I don't like tying with red rope when my hair isn't dyed red because I feel like the rope is an extension of myself. And then it feels like it's not an extension of me if it doesn't match my hair. And I really like the idea that rope is an extension of another person. And I think that sensuality encompasses that notion, right? Where it's like now they have more fingers, arms, hands, toes, whatever, to fold around you. And then there is rope that is about eroticism, which may or may not be about sex, right? It can be foreplay, it can be post-sex, it can be during, right? There's like all these different things that it can be. But it ultimately is about this eroticism where you're exploring sexual energy in exchange with or without actual sexual acts. We're trying to like tease and arouse the other person. Maybe you're going to follow through with it, maybe not. But this, you know, can include rope that feels like a seduction or, you know, rope that is a sexual encounter or rope that's just foreplay. You know, like it has lots of different sexual elements to it. The word tension is often preceded in the English language by the word sexual. And if you think about rope, like one of the main things that we talk about as being key to having good rope is having good tension. And we're talking physically about that fact, but it can also apply to the emotional experience of it, right? Where you're trying to build sexual tension in addition to having good tension within your rope. And sometimes these things are related. If you're like me and you basically have a fetish for perfectly tensioned rope, which I do as a bottom, then you can really turn me on if your rope is very well tensioned. And then, of course, lots of people are into rope because they're into being restrained. As I mentioned, one of the kinky things that people can really be into about rope bondage is bondage. And sometimes for those people, like the elaborate rope is really superfluous, right? That's not what they came here for. They're looking for the feeling of being bound and done. Like they're going to be happy as soon as their hands are tied and everything after that is just whatever. But for other people, they're looking for an intense experience of constraint where like they get to be more constrained than they could ever be if you just put a pair of handcuffs on them. And one of the things I think we often forget about that is that you can restrain people like with regards to you in ways that can become more intimate. So, I mean, obviously, you can tie two people together if you're topping two bottoms, but sometimes it's even hot to like mostly tie another person and then tie part of them to you, right? It's kind of like a leash situation at that point. But there's like this restraint combined potentially with some sort of intimacy. We tend to frame bondage as just like something that you do to another person, but ultimately it's about restraining them like with a tool. And the thing that makes rope bondage exciting, as opposed to the millions of other types of bondage that you can do, is that it's something that the other person has to actively do to you, right? Like if you put somebody into a straitjacket, you just put a bunch of buckles on. Okay. I mean, personally, I love being restrained by rope. I think it's really hot. Part of what I find so hot about it is that the person has to work for it and they have to be good at it. And talent and skill and competence is extremely sexy to me. I would say competence is probably my biggest turn on, period. And there's just not a lot of skill and competence to like locking a key in a pair of handcuffs or buckling some buckles. They will all result in restraint. But one of those forms of restraint is something that somebody else has to actively put work into, whereas the other is just kind of like, oh, well, you put a moment's thought into it. Thanks. So I like to think about rope restraint as being intentional, active, skilled restraint in a way that many other forms of bondage are not. Relatedly, as a kink is what I call claustrophilia, which is a word that I, as far as I know, I invented. Claustrophilia, which being sort of the opposite of claustrophobia, right? Claustrophobia being a fear of being constrained or squished. I think people who are claustrophiles are often very attracted to rope bondage because they enjoy feeling squished and constrained. I know for myself that I enjoy this, especially when there's another person involved. Like, I love being tied to another person. I think it's really hot. I like being squished up against them. I like feeling their body against me. One of the things that I often really enjoy as a rope top is when I'm doing like sexy rope, is I will like suspend someone fully, and then towards the end of the sequence, I will lay down on the floor and then lower them on top of me. And I still, even when I'm topping, really enjoy the heavy sensation of another person on me. And then they're like really stuck there. And I find that very hot. So for claustrophiles, it's not just about restraint, it's also about compression. It's about feeling like, you've been very wrapped up. These are people who really like the idea, or at least, are turned on by the idea of like being tied up and like stuck in a box, for example, right? Maybe, or like people who really are into the idea of like a lot more rope on them potentially, or they just want to feel like they've been compressed. Another one of the kinky things that people really often enjoy, sometimes without realizing it, about rope is breath control. One of the reasons why I think rope bottoming is basically just straight up a form of yoga is that in order to be able to do it well, you have to have really excellent ability to control your breath, which is the heart of yoga. And we don't recognize or often really teach a lot about breath control and how it figures into rope. But in almost any tie that you see where somebody's chest has been tied, they have to change their breathing. And like you can intentionally change that in all sorts of ways. So the term positional asphyxiation refers to any tie position that you stick someone in where it gets harder to breathe. And so, like, there's a famous pose called gyaku ebi, which is just reverse shrimp in Japanese, which is basically a hog tie in the air. And what many people see when they see that is something that's like really pretty and requires a lot of back flexibility, and it does. But the thing that's actually typically the hardest for most people about that position is the breath control required. It is extremely difficult to breathe in that position. And if you doubt me, put yourself into like a yoga scorpion on the floor and tilt your head back a little bit, and you'll start to get a sense for how hard it is to breathe like that. Obviously, there's plenty of ties that we do in rope that are specifically what we call choker ties that are designed to focus on limiting somebody else's breath. But the reality is that almost all rope limits your breath, And if you are somebody who really enjoys rote bottoming, it is something that you start to really kind of get a kick out of. Completely different thing that I think a lot of people enjoy is what I call aesthetic objectification, which is using rope to create art, right? And like that can still be very kinky, right? You can really enjoy the idea of objectifying someone in that way. We make shapes or poses out of the other person. We find expressions of bodies and faces beautiful, or we make them ugly, or we make them gross, or we make them disoriented, right? Like whatever the emotion or the expression or feeling, maybe it's degradation, maybe it is uplifting that we want, but we still use the other person as our canvas to create that feeling, that look, that expression. And for me, this is a huge part of why I do rope, but especially as a top. And I learned fairly early on that if I tied people who weren't into this as bottoms, that they found being tied by me to be really alienating. And I always warn new bottoms being tied by me that I tend to engage in this pretty heavily. And if they're not into that, then we're probably not going to be a good match. I think also a lot of people who are into that are only into that because they like already have an emotional connection and attachment to the other person. Whereas for me, that's way more a way that I can develop an emotional attachment and connection to the other person. Another thing that I think figures into a lot of why some people do rope is specific, what I call body part fixations. So a lot of times, this is especially true for riggers, but also for rope bottoms, there's like a particular part of the body that they like to see in rope. I mean, obviously, a lot of ties are designed to make people's asses look great. And so that's a common thing that people are very into is figuring out how to make great ass in rope. As I mentioned, I'm super into strappados on both sides. I really love the way that people look when their arms are tied like that behind their backs. I enjoy the fig leafing that happens incidentally along their ass cracks. I think it's really sexy. I also personally have a huge thing for hair tied to toes, both as a bottom and a top, to the point where I joke that if you see photos that in certain positions where like somebody's hair isn't tied to their toes, it's like, ah, you know that I was tying with somebody else because otherwise I would have tied their hair to their toes. People have things that they're super into as both tops and bottoms. And a lot of times those are about the way that the body moves or about the specific shape that they're trying to get the body into or the way that certain parts of the body relate to other parts. I already mentioned, obviously, a big part of the kink in rope is power exchange, right? And so for many people, this is like the reason that they do it, the beginning and end of the sentence. And they're sometimes confused by the idea that people do it for anything else. The expectation in a lot of those arrangements is like the bottom shows up and submits, and the top ties them, and that's like a huge part of how this goes. And so obviously the top is in control. I would say for the first few years that I was in rope world, there was just kind of an assumption that like if you were a rigger, that you were a dom, which eventually I think people started to realize that this often just wasn't true. But there was a heavy assumption that like riggers were dominants and bottoms were submissives, the end. And as rope got more and more popular, I think that idea slowly started to shift and fade. And the idea that, people would be into rope without that became more present, but still extremely pervasive, understandably, is the idea that, like, if you're going to give up control of your body, that you are somebody who probably likes to submit. And if you like to take control of other people's bodies, that you probably like to dominate. And that this is going to be heavily built into the types of ties that you do and the reasons that you do them. Another thing that a lot of people are very into on the kink side here is degradation, exposure, and humiliation, which are probably all technically separate things, but all heavily related in ways that I couldn't begin to try to explicate in the remaining few minutes that I'm going to do this particular episode. So these pleasures can be subtle or not, and a lot of times they depend on the preferences of the people involved. So like Sometimes they're about like face rope as being a form of like degradation, or like panties shoved aside and open leg ties as a form of exposure, putting your feet on a bottom in the air or when they're on the ground as a way to like show your power, demonstration, like type of degradation. There's a whole lot of ways to make someone feel reduced in rope, but obviously they're still very individual and culturally dependent. So my favorite story about that was when one of my dear rope humans one time was tying me, and they were going to take a photo of me, and they were being very silly about it, you know, and they, like, I was wearing a dress and they tugged my dress out. And so my nipples were now exposed. And this is a classic like thing that you'll see in a lot of traditional like shibari type rope photography, especially when it's coming more out of Japan. And the idea is that it's like very exposing. And it's like, oh, your nipples are out. Ah, but it's like more exposing because you were wearing clothes and now we've like shoved them out of the way. And so they go, now look ashamed, like jokingly at me. And I was like, friend, I'm an American. The way that you make me feel ashamed in rope is if you show my fat rolls and my cellulite. That's what I don't want to see in photographs of me in rope. I personally do it anyway because I think it's important for people to see what real humans look like when they're tied up. But immediately, one of my photography friends, who's a very degrady, toppy human being, was like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. I was like, great, now you have terrible ideas. But obviously, those ideas are always very culturally constrained. I've been told that in Japan, it's like very exposing to show your armpits and like kind of shameful, which is part of why a number of ties are designed to show your armpits. Whereas, you know, Americans don't care. And so like these things all really depend on where you're coming from. Another thing that people enjoy in rope are what are called predicaments, which I find are often very popular with brats because they like to feel like they put up a fight. And a predicament tie is one that's designed to like make you suffer, but gives you a certain degree of control or power over like, the nature of your suffering, and is often designed to tire you out. It's a little hard to explain without any type of photo, but basically they create ways for the bottoms to alleviate one form of suffering in favor of another form of suffering by shifting their body and their weight and in the tie. And I love these types of ties as both a top and a bottom because I think it's really fun to watch somebody get worn out as they shift themselves around. But also I end up playing with a lot of brats. And so brats really like predicament ties because I think it lets them feel like they're fighting the experience of being tied. Another thing I think some people like in rope is what I refer to as just plain mean, which I joke is all the things that they teach you in rigor school that you shouldn't do. And then over time, you inevitably find that somebody likes that thing. So these include things like intentional rope burn, which is when you move the rope really fast over somebody's skin and it burns them. Which, by the way, that's not a turn of phrase. It actually is a literal burn. So rope bottoms out there, if you get rope burns and you don't want it to scar, you should treat it like an actual burn with burn cream. Uneven tension, which can be really obnoxious as the rope bottom. Separating body rope lines so that like you get these like horrible skin squeezes coming through, which can also lead to rope burn. Hauling people up into single points suspensions instead of slowly dropping them into them. And so like sometimes there are bottoms who are into this. They're all considered like asshole moves when you're first learning rope. But you know, once you get good, sometimes you're allowed to break the rules. There's many different types of rope suffering. And one of them is what I refer to as you'll get used to it. You just hang there and suffer in that one pose for forever. I'm always really interested by the types of rope bottoms who do well in that, who often are not the same types of rope bottoms who do well in relatively dynamic forms of rope where you're moving around a lot and changing things up a lot. But people who enjoy that type of rope often, as I mentioned earlier, really like Hashira type ties where you're in a post and you're just sort of like in this one pose for a long time. There's also what I call contorture, which is a particular form of sadism that involves manipulating the body into painful shapes and forms that it does not normally naturally conform to. And so, like, these, for me, the aesthetic appeal of this is like, well, but you could never get somebody to really put themselves into that shape. Like, even if they were a contortionist, they couldn't really just like stay in that shape, or maybe they couldn't make that shape themselves. They can only do it if somebody else does it to them. And I think that's really hot. And then an important distinction between what I call the way you like to hurt versus the way you hate to hurt. So the way you like to hurt might be things that you, parts of your body that you enjoy hurting, or parts of your body that you enjoy hurting in particular ways. So like for myself, I know I really like having my feet and toes tortured in general, versus the way that you hate to hurt. So sometimes people actively like have fun with that. So for example, I end up tying a number of people who love toe rope and foot rope and having their feet touched. And so therefore they kind of enjoy me doing foot and toe rope to them because that's something they hate. There's also what I call single pointed agony, which doesn't actually literally have to be a single pointed suspension or partial, but it means that you're intentionally focusing all of the pain of the tie on like a very particular part of the body in a very specifically painful way. So this can be like being suspended entirely from like the waist, or, you know, your foot or your ankle, but it can also just mean that like you've loaded most of the weight of the tie into that thing, for example. Relatedly, there's what I call the transitional glee, which is like people who really enjoy going through lots and lots of transitions in the air. And again, that still actually applies to the floor, right? Where like you started off in one pose and then you're going into another one and then you're going into another one. And like you're constantly changing the shape and the experience of what hurts. And I will say that frequently the kinds of people who are really sturdy in those types of rope transitions and can get through a lot of them and have fun with that and endure that well aren't often always the kinds of people who can just stand there and take the same pose for a long time, and vice versa, which I find really interesting. Then there's rope that is primarily for challenge, which like we did a tie with a specific goal that we were doing something that was hard for both of us. And we like felt really great for helping each other succeed or supporting each other, even if we didn't quite make it. So, for example, I remember one of the first ties that I did with one of my long-term rope partners. I was like, hey, so I had this idea that I wanted to do a complicated suspension sequence where I single pointed everything in the course of the suspension. And I'm not like going to change any of the elements of it. I'm just going to go get through this like complicated, weird series of single points. So the suspension sequence involved being suspended by five different parts of her body. And she was like, yeah, I'm here for it. And it was really fucking hard for both of us. It was very hard to tie, and it was very hard for her to be in. When we were done, we were just like, that was great. It was New Year's Day. We were like, we've brought in the year with this really cool suspension sequence. And it was really fun. There's lots of challenge type ties like that that can be hard for both the bottom and the top that are really fun. Again, related to that is speed demons. So people who are really into rope that goes fast. I personally have a huge thing for being tied quickly and also to tie quickly. I'm really into it when people tie fast. I know lots of people don't give a shit, but you know, I also really enjoy the experience of rope both as a top and a bottom, where speed is something that's very conscious, like a symphony, right? So like parts of the tie go slow and parts of it speed up and then maybe it gets slow again, like it goes through phases. I think a lot of people, when they're creating ties as like scenes, ignore the experience of sort of tempo. I suppose that maybe is another element of that speed demon, but just like being very aware of how fast the tying is going and how fast the movement is happening and how the rope is interacting with the body in terms of its speed. And then relatedly, performance. Right. So, you know, for many people, performative rope, which is to say like rope that's in front of an audience that's intended to be viewed, is stressful, and they feel disconnected from their partner. And I often have heard specifically people contrasting quote-unquote connective rope with a performance, which is very puzzling to me because I find performances to be incredibly connective with the other person. It is hard for me to imagine something that's more connective, but that's a personal preference. And so like those types of people just like kind of want to melt into their partner and forget about the audience. But for people who really enjoy it, like me, performances are these like euphorically high adrenaline experiences, and the inclusion of the audience is a big source of pleasure. Like, hey, these other people are getting off on this. This is a, I mean, it's a form of exhibitionism sometimes at that point, frequently at that point. But, you know, there's a lot for other people to potentially enjoy about your rope. And so, like, being able to interact with them can bring a lot to the way that you're now interacting with your partner, if that's the kind of thing that you're into. And I've mentioned adrenaline a lot over the course of this episode. You know, there are plenty of people like me who are really into rope as adrenaline junkies who really want to do shit that's hard so that they can get a high. And I've never found anything else in my life that gives me the kind of consistent adrenaline rush that rope on either topping or bottoming can do when it's done well. The nice thing about rope is that I often like to say that there's a crucial distinction between rope that looks dangerous, feels dangerous, and is dangerous. And I love doing rope that looks dangerous and feels dangerous, but usually isn't very dangerous. I've never found another physical activity that I personally am capable of doing easily that is that not actually dangerous. And I'm sure that lots of people commenting underneath, rope is so dangerous. Well, yes, sure, rope is dangerous, but like compared to adjacent activities that I've also done, like point dancing, pole dancing, fire spinning. I've done all of these things for years, most of them semi-professionally. And rope is a lot less dangerous than any of those things. And it'll give you way more of a high. At least it gives me way more of a high than most of those for way less of a cost, as it were. Your mileage may vary. And sure, some people get very injured by rope. I don't want to pretend like they don't. But check out the injury records on some of those other activities. And I'll say, like, in terms of the cost-benefit ratio there for adrenaline, I at least find that the cost for rope is relatively low compared to the adrenaline benefit. But again, matter of personal preference. And there are people who are super into rope for rope's sake, which is to say that, like, it's not really about you as a person anymore. We both just love rope so much that we'll keep doing it regardless. I meet people regularly who are like, let's have coffee, let's go out to dinner, like, still get to know each other before we do rope. And I'm always very confused by that. I'm like, no, I promise I'm a much better first date with rope than I am with coffee, partly because I am super into rope for rope's sake. And I find that rope is a great way to get to know people. And I don't necessarily feel like it has to include other things. One of my very long-term rope bottoms once said to me, I love being tied by you because I don't have to feel anything, which I thought was a hilarious compliment because there's a lot of people who really put a lot of focus on the idea that rope should feel something specific or you should feel something very particular in rope, which I do enjoy for sure. But then there's other people who are just like, I just really fucking love rope. And, you know, I will just stand there and tie anybody who I feel safe and competent with. So like really the opposite of that rope for rope's sake, I think, is the feels people, right? For whom rope is about having a powerful emotional or transformative experience. And for some people, it's just boring without that. They're like, what? I came here to do something that felt emotionally intense and evocative. Like they want their rope bottoms to cry. They want them to like have a really intense emotional experience of some sort. I personally really enjoy doing rope for feels as long as that's like well negotiated and we know what we're doing. For some people, rope is about dancing, even more than what I was talking about earlier, where I was talking about sort of rope as a form of dance. I know some people who literally like to dance in rope, which is to say, like, they want some free limbs so they can move around and it's like very, very dynamic for them. They want the bottom to do dynamic things in rope. You can see videos of people doing this, especially some people out in like San Francisco. I tend to do some more like dancey, dancey rope. So, like, Shay Tiziano, who's written a couple books, really specializes in this type of like super dancey rope where usually there's like hands-free chest harnesses and it looks a lot less like more of this Japanese inspired rope bondage that really emphasizes limbs being tied. But the idea is that the bottom can move. And then the last thing I mean, I'm sure there's more, but the last thing on my list in terms of things that people love about rope is what I call the woo. Woo is a kink and kink adjacent term for spirituality and spiritual related stuff. And I teach an entire class on rope spirituality because it's something that I'm very passionate about. It's not something I get to do very much. But I think that rope is what I like to say. It's the physical manifestation of the platonic ideal of connection, which is to say that you can use rope to connect anything. For all that I started off this episode laughing about the idea of using the word connection, here I am talking at the end about it. A rope is something that can be used to physically connect people to one another. It can be used to imagine connecting a person to the idea of community. It can be used to connect you and the other person to like a concept of the divine. I've done many rope rituals. There's a lot of ways that you can use rope for spiritual purposes. And those spiritual purposes can be small or they can be large. But there's a lot of transformative potential in rope. And so, one of the sayings that I like to use with regards to this is, as the body can transform pain into pleasure, the heart can transform suffering into love. And there's a lot of pain that can be transformed through rope in some really beautiful ways. Like, most of the time when we see these beautiful pictures of rope, we don't realize that the person who's being tied is in so much fucking pain. But sometimes pain is beautiful. And I think there's a lot of meditative potential in that as people work through those experiences. And I know for myself, I've had some really powerful cathartic scenes that I've done as both a top and a bottom using rope. And it's a vehicle for a great deal of transcendental connection. So those are some of the many, many ways that one can love rope, and some of the many, many ways that I personally love rope. And so if you are new to rope, I hope that I've given you some perspectives on it that maybe you didn't have before. And if you're an old hand at rope, I hope I've perhaps given you some vocabulary for talking about it that you didn't necessarily have before. And thank you for listening.